Sermons from the Journey is an audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Rebecca Clark, pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church in Montpelier, Vermont, and blogging online at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
Paul shared with you some of the highlights that he experienced at annual conference this year, this season, and I wanted to share a couple that I experienced as well. During the bishop's first episcopal address, it's kind of, you know, his introduction to the annual conference. We have a new bishop this year, new to us, Bishop Suda. We call him Bishop Suda or Shana Davidar, but we call him Bishop Suda now. At least I do. I like that better. He's very friendly and warm and loving and an incredible spiritual leader. And one of the beautiful things that he did was he yielded a huge portion of his time in this sort of inaugural sermon that he's using to introduce himself to the annual conference. He gave a tremendous amount of his time to a young woman from a church in Rhode Island called The River. She's not yet ordained. Her name is Rebecca, though, so it's a good name, right? Her congregation, many of them were there with T-shirts that said, "Pastor Rebecca Rocks," which I thought were so cool until I realized they weren't for me. They were still pretty cool. They were very cool. And she came and she shared both her testimony and the testimony of her congregation a little bit with us. And I won't try to recreate it because I could never share someone else's story as well as they can. But her story is a story of coming through a time of addiction and homelessness in her life and finding in that time a church that ministered to her in her time of need with food and a safe place to be, much like our community meal ministers to our community here in Montpelier. This church ministered to her, and so she became part of this church, and it really transformed her life. And then she shared the ministry and the witness of this church, which was kind of similar in some ways. This church that had so touched her and changed her life, it began to decline and to dwindle until it got down to six people remaining in the congregation. And at that time, the conference made the decision it was time to close the church. And those six people remained in the building that last day when the district superintendent was coming to help them and to be with them in that last moment to close the church doors for the last time. They stayed at the altar in the church all day, and they prayed and they prayed. And when the district superintendent showed up, they turned and said to him, "We don't think that this is what God wants right now. If you will let Rebecca be our local pastor, if you will let her pastor to us and with us and give us one more year, we want to see what God can do with this church." And lo and behold, would you know what? It worked. And the church was transformed, and the community was transformed, and people grew in number and in faith. And this tremendous transformation happened from this dark and difficult moment in their church's story and church's history. Now, anybody who will talk to you about how to give a testimony and do it well, how to share the good news of God's love and do it well, how to tell the story of what God's done in your life, will tell you that it's important to be honest about and to share the difficulties, the struggles. And so even as Paul was sharing the tremendous excitement and joy he felt at annual conference, did you notice that he said, "I realized how lonely I had been when I got there and was so embraced by this community, and there was so much joy in that," right? That joy, that elation, that celebration comes because we have journeyed through a time of sorrow, a time of tears, and a time of struggle, a time of darkness in our personal lives. So we have this woman in the gospel story this morning. We know nothing about her life. In fact, what we do know about her is pretty judgmental. Both the author of the gospel and the Pharisee whose house she's visiting tell us that she is a sinful woman and kind of imply she's one of those sinful women. We can kind of let our imaginations run wild with that, but we probably don't have to. But she's a woman. She's been through who knows what in her life, and she hears that Jesus is at Simon's house. Now, Simon, I'm going to guess from his reactions and what he says and the way he seems to present himself, be presented in the story, I'm going to guess that Simon invited Peter to, or Jesus to his house. Got Simon Peter confused there a little bit. That Simon invited Jesus to his house as a kind of show of status. Jesus is the hip guy right now, you know? He's really cool. He's making a lot of waves. He's, you know, the in guy on the religious scene. And Simon the Pharisee wants to be seen as in with the cool guy. So he invites Jesus to his house. But then having done that, having let this itinerant street rabbi come into his house and have a meal, he forgoes all the other traditional hospitality rituals that one would extend to an honored guest. He doesn't wash his feet. He doesn't anoint him. He doesn't greet him with an embrace. He doesn't do the hosting things. But this woman hears that Jesus is there, and so she invites herself. She crashes the party, as the bishop said in his sermon. She invites herself to this dinner, and she comes on in with an expensive jar of perfume. And she begins immediately to weep and to wash Jesus' feet with her tears. Now, as I said to the children, I can only imagine how many tears it takes to wash somebody's feet. I cry a lot. You all know this. I cry tears of joy. I cry tears of sorrow. I cry tears of I don't know why I'm crying. And I cry a lot. And I've seen that there can be a fair amount of tears there, but not enough to bathe someone's feet. This woman cries copious tears. The bishop shared with us in his sermon during the ordination service that in the Jewish tradition, in the faith of Israel, that people saved their tears over the course of the year. And there's a service in which they're used ritualistically. And there's the belief that tears of joy and tears of sorrow have different chemical properties, different spiritual properties. They certainly feel differently to us when we shed them, but that once shed, they have different properties. And so this woman, we could imagine that she's, these tears that could have been saved, she's now pouring out. She's letting them all go until she has none left. She is pouring out all her grief, all her sorrow, maybe all her elation and hope. I imagine that if she has been through tremendous struggle in her life, that she carries tears of sorrow and shame and burden, but that in that moment when she begins releasing those tears at Jesus' feet, they also are joined by tears of relief and release to let all of that burden go. And then perhaps tears of hope and joy and thanksgiving in that moment when she feels that she can let all of that go and she has been received by Jesus. And then she takes down her hair. Very shocking. Anybody who's seen, any movie where a woman is being physically objectified, like Charlie's Angels or something, right? And the woman takes off her helmet and shakes out her hair, right? We know how sensuous an image that is, right? So this is not proper behavior at the dinner table. She takes down her hair and she begins touching somebody else with it. She's drying Jesus' feet with her hair. This is indecent. This is like oversharing, TMI. This is too much closeness and intimacy and compassion and love that's being shared in this moment. There are all these people having a dinner party and Simon's trying to, you know, show off his status. And here this woman is stealing the show and being downright improper with Jesus. And so he says something. Well, he thinks something. He thinks, well, Jesus should know what sort of woman she is. Here she comes with her hair all flying all over the place. You know how they are. And he's thinking this in his heart, and Jesus can tell that that's what's going on, and he says something. And I love that Jesus takes it out of this, like, really kind of too touchy-feely, too emotional moment, and gives him this very kind of dry, precise example that I think might help someone see it a little bit better in a different context about debt and forgiveness of debt. So Simon can see that. Yeah, if you've got a big debt forgiven, you're more grateful than if you have a little debt forgiven. Good. Everybody understands that. Good. And then Jesus brings it back in and he says, you see this woman? You notice her? She's done all the things, all the extravagantly hospitable things that you've failed to do. She's washed my feet and dried them. She's kissed my feet incessantly. She has anointed them with expensive perfume. You've done none of these things. She has been forgiven much. She has been through so much to come to this moment, and she's feeling the relief, the release, and the thanksgiving of having come to this place and being able to pour out all of that grief and shame and sorrow and brokenness in her life. And so she is overcome with the extravagant love that she wants to offer in return. Whereas you, who think you're so high and mighty and maybe haven't walked that dark and difficult road, you can't possibly understand what it is to pour out that kind of grief and burden. So perhaps that's why you can't quite bring yourself to pour out that love and blessing. A tremendous gift that we are given in this story, this reminder that we who, because all of us get there at some point in our lives. I believe even Simon got there, and he wanted to hide it or forget it or run from it, but everybody has a moment in their life. Everyone has pain and grief and sorrow, and we can pretend it doesn't exist, and we can brush it under the carpet, and we can think it's indecent to talk about it or express it, or we can, sometimes we have no choice. Sometimes we do. We can let it go. We can let it out. We can express the darkness, the difficulty, the pain and brokenness we felt. And when that happens, we see it time and time again. Those powerful stories, those powerful testimonies that so touch and move us, our own stories, the stories of one another, the stories we hear, are those stories that are willing to be honest and say, I once was lost, but now am found. It's the being lost that makes the being found so profound. I once was broken, but I've been made whole. I once was alone and suffering, and no one would touch me, no one would see me, no one would see beyond the sinful woman category. And now I am forgiven and lifted up by God's love. And in that, We pour out, yes, when we have released all of our tears of sorrow, then all of our tears of joy as well, until all of it is expressed and said and cried out, and we are set free. We are set free to give a gift of our full, authentic selves. And that brings me to my other highlight, something that I never expected, never saw coming in a worship service that I planned. Now, when I plan a worship service, I expect to have control over every last minute of it. That never happens. I can expect that all I want. In the Saturday morning worship service, we had this amazing preacher who's a friend of mine, Jun Sung Oh, and he's the pastor actually of the church in Roslindale, which is part of Boston, and that's the church that I attended when I was in seminary. It's this magnificent, multi-ethnic, multinational congregation. There is no ethnic majority in that church, national majority in that church. There are people from all over the world. It's amazing. And that's what I loved about it then, and he was talking about the gift that that brings now, and he had this powerful, powerful sermon. Now, I like Jun Sung, and I've been at meetings with him. I've been out to lunch with him. He's a great man, a powerful pastor and prophetic speaker, and I knew that. What I didn't know is that he is an amazing singer. He closed his sermon with a song, and I turned to the person sitting next to me, also a friend of his, and both our jaws just dropped into our laps. I've never heard anything like this. He just started singing in Korean a hymn that he said was powerful and meaningful to him, and a hymn whose title, he says, translates something about light in the darkness. In the darkness there is a light, right? And he starts singing, and you can just tell he's singing from the depth of his soul. And then all of a sudden, something happened. And I thought, oh boy, there's a problem with the sound system. There's always a problem with the sound system at conference, and always during the service that I plan, right? It's a problem with the sound system because I'm hearing an echo behind me. I'm hearing a Korean man singing behind me. And the echo gets louder and sounds like there are more. And I turn in my seat, and every person of Korean descent in that room is on their feet, and they are singing along with Jun Sung, with tears in their eyes and in mine, singing at the top of their lungs, waving their hands in the air. We have no idea, us poor Anglo folk have no idea what they're saying. But we can tell it comes from the very depths of their souls, and it is communicating without words that I could understand, communicating the joy and the relief and the hope that comes when light shines in the darkest places. And these folks, without anyone having to give a special invitation for them to do so, these folks are giving a deep, authentic gift of worship. Might it have been improper, indecent, unplanned, certainly unplanned? Who knows? Might it have been too intimate, perhaps? Who knows? But no. In the moment of worship, in the spirit of worship, it was the most beautiful, authentic gift I'd seen. They were pouring their hearts out to God. And my heart was poured out with theirs in this moment of beauty and transformation. When we see someone who has been through that journey, whatever that personal journey is, collapse at Jesus' feet and wash them with her tears, we could think it's indecent, or we could let our hearts be moved with hers. And when we see people stand and sing a hymn, a song that we don't even understand, of praise and thanksgiving, we could say, well, I don't understand what's happening here. Or we could let our spirits be moved with theirs. And when we have the opportunity and the choice to brush aside the pain in our lives or to push into it, bear witness to it, and tell other people how God has transformed us in it, what a powerful gift and testimony. We all have been loved much. We all have been forgiven much. We all have been in darkness, in brokenness, in sorrow, in pain. And so we all are invited to pour out our tears, to be extravagant in our love and hospitality and gift, to lift our voices in whatever songs we know and love and sing with all our hearts. As God invites us, where the prim and proper society may not see fit, invites us to bring our whole selves, our whole hearts, our whole soul, body, mind, spirit into God's presence with thanksgiving, with relief, with joy. Amen.